The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. I hope everyone had a great spring break. I was out for just a couple of days, but the entire office for the most part was gone, and the entire town for that sake. So looking forward to having a show today, very timely, right? So much going on in the markets, the banking sector. Really excited about being here with you all, maybe explaining a few things, maybe putting a few people's nerves at ease, and we'll have Hot Rod on in just a few minutes to talk about what's been going on, what we think's going on. I just had a really great conversation with the institutional bond desk at a well-known brokerage house, and they have their finger completely on the pulse because they trade within institutions, right? They're trading with insurance companies, mutual funds, big, large national banks. So it's pretty interesting to see from the inside out what's really going on. And it's been an interesting ride the last week and a half, and I'm glad that we are here. So let's do a quick rundown of what's been going on in the news, and we'll just kind of stick to the most recent stuff here on a Thursday as I record. No show on Thursday night because of NCAA basketball. Unfortunately, no Hoosiers playing tonight, whether it be on the men or women's side, of course. We both got booted out, but good seasons nonetheless, and we're on and upward to the next season. But Saturday morning, the most famous time at 9 a.m., we will be on. And then, of course, WGCLradio.com and your favorite podcast place as well. All right, let's talk about this. The Fed did approve, and we'll talk about this in a little bit with Rod, another quarter point rate increase. And I'm glad they did, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. And they have signaled that we're going to probably go even higher and maybe stay there longer. So just brace for that. Powell said that the U.S. banking system is sound and resilient, but that the central bank needs to strengthen supervision and regulation of the financial sector. You know what? I was going back and doing some research. This happens every time we have some kind of a failure. Back in 08, during the mortgage crisis, we thought it was just subprime mortgages, right? This is such a little market. Well, we didn't know it was leveraged to the hilt, and it took down everything else with it. And then we move on to, 2013, where we started to see more regulations come in on banks, which were going to allow them to have less leverage. In other words, when you put money on deposit, how much money can they lend out? How much money can they invest? And that was in 13. And now here we are in 2023, and I'm sure we're going to have some more banking regulations come down the road. Stocks and government bond yields did end lower in the wake of the Fed's policy meeting. Not a big surprise. We'll get into more detail on that. We have inflation here, but, overseas, and I'm going to be there in April. I'm going to Paris for a few days. My wife and I and my son are going to go over and experience Disneyland Paris for a couple of days. We'll scour around the city of Paris for a day and then fly down to London for 4 days for a conference that was supposed to have happened in 2020, and now it's finally happening 3 years later. So my first time to London, but Britain, their inflation is proving stubbornly high. Price increases in February picked up 10.4% from 10.1%. So I'm grateful that the exchange rate's in my favor. Remember, when the dollar is strong, you take it abroad. It's kind of like military, right? If you're strong, you go abroad. If you're weak, you stay home. Right now, the dollar is relatively strong against the euro and the other currencies, like the pound and things like that. So maybe we'll get a little more bang for our buck. It's not going to be huge, but if this inflation continues, that Coke or beer or hot dog or whatever they're going to serve me over there may be a little more expensive. All right, let's thank our sponsors, of course. We have Unrivaled Electric. Talked to him this week. He finished up a house for us down in Harrodsburg. Thank you very much, Tim. He specializes in generators and solar arrays. Veteran-owned. Unrivaled Electric wants to be your electrician like mine. Give him a call, 812-361-3604, and he's got some great strategic relationships that can pretty much handle anything you've got on your plate. So always give him a call. He'll steer you in the right direction. Talked to this man yesterday, Dirk Bland at Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. He would love to pre-plan the sale of your estate or real estate, make it easy on your family. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And I get emails weekly from Lance Like as well, and that is the law group that will give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about how banks even work. Let's talk about that. Let's get the basics out of the way when it comes to deposits, when it comes to loans, but there's so much more to that. And local banks, regional banks, national banks, they all operate just a little bit differently. So we're going to talk to Rod about that. And then what happened to that bank in California, or the banks in California? And on top of all this, the Fed did meet, and they did what we thought they were going to do. And they actually credited a lot of things for the reason that they should move forward, and I'm glad they did. But we're going to continue to talk about that. And later on, I'm going to talk about FDIC insurance. You know, we haven't really talked about this. No one's cared about this. Like, okay, my deposit's only insured up to $250,000. The answer is yes. But I'm going to share with you just a couple tricks of the trade to maximize your FDIC insurance at a bank with one single account, simply how you register that account. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Man, a lot's been going on, so there's a lot to talk about. And I have Rod Holloway now on the phone. Of course, you hear Rod on Glass in the Afternoons on Mondays and Fridays to book in the week. And I don't think you're going to be on again this Friday, Rod, because our good friend Terry's visitation is on Friday. So they're going to shut the show down again to respect Terry Stoltz and his family. And for those here at the station, they can go to the visitation as well. It's a sad week around Bloomington, and Rod, I know you and I talked about that this past week when we both found out that Terry had passed away suddenly, and just want to give, you don't even know what to say, to be honest, because you have the kids and grandkids and all the family, and I know their hearts are all stomped out right now, and it's going to be a tough week for them all, but we won't be hearing Glass in the Afternoon on Friday or Hot Rod, so you're going to get all the Hot Rod you want here on Your Money with David Hayes. Rod, I was talking to people recently who have not paid attention to run on the banks and all that since they watched, you know, was it It's a Wonderful Life around Christmas time, right? That's when you get a little lesson on that. But I wanted to talk to people just a little on a very basic level of how banking works. And then we can get a better idea of what the risks are involved. And then later we can talk more about how to maximize your FDIC insurance as well. So basically, banks take deposits. That's the main way they operate. They take deposits. And they use those deposits to leverage into loans and other investments. And I was doing some research, and I was trying to figure out if the leverage is around 10%, but I think it is based on some ratios I was looking at. It could be as high as 20% at times, but I think around 10. So if I'm wrong, don't send me any emails or anything. It's kind of framing up the basics of it. So you put $100 on deposit, and then a bank can lend out or invest $1,000, and that's how it works. So the loans are out there, and then people all of a sudden decide, hey, I need some money. So they come to the bank and they get money, and all of a sudden they run out of money. So what does the bank do? Well, they have these assets that they can basically shift over to the Fed or maybe sell to another institution to get the capital they need to redeem these deposits. Well, that's the way it works. So when you have too many people coming to get their money at one time, the money's not sitting there in the vault. They have to come up with it some way. So they borrow it. They have to sell assets. Maybe they sell more stock, which is dilutive to shareholders, and that's how they come up with the money. And but when it comes all at one time, that's when the problem happens. And that's what happened in California with the bank there, the banks there, that it wasn't you or I going and taking $2,000 or $3,000 out. It was someone starting the cascading effect by wanting like $500 million out. And when you start pulling that kind of money out, that can be a major, major problem. And there was a really good article today in the Wall Street Journal, Rod, just kind of outlining just how that SVB bank made a frantic dash for funds right before the seizure, but they ran out of time. But it looked like they were starting to line up some dough to kind of get them bailed out, and they just ran out of time. But I think when people put money in the bank, they just, you know, we grew up thinking that's the safest place to put your money, right? You throw it in the bank, don't have to worry about it. But it's not always the safest place to put your money. And I think we've seen that with the last couple of weeks behind us, and that people need to be aware that there's really risk in everything. There's risk in everything that you do. And we have, you have credit risk, you have inflation risk, you have market risk, you have all kinds of risk out there. And I don't think people fully grasp the idea that, yes, putting your money in a bank does come with some risk. Right, Rod?
Yeah, it most certainly does. And first, I'd like to pass on my condolences to Terry's family and friends as well during this tough time for them. Yeah, and I think that's where it also becomes kind of important. And this isn't always easy because really until this situation happened, there probably wasn't much reason for the retail banker to think about it. But to know and understand your bank's business model, the situation we're in right now and what's happening is relatively unique within the banking model, meaning especially pertinent to Silicon Valley Bank or SVB. 70 to 80% of their deposits were not covered by FDIC insurance. Why were they not covered? Because it was from depositors who put in far more than the FDIC limit. $250,000 for an individual. You're going to discuss later some other ways that you can have higher protection, be it joints, trust, things like that. I'm not going to go down that road. I'll let you cover that. I'll just stick to the basics that many of their depositors had far greater than that. Part of that was because SVB was working and proactively looking in the startup, venture capital, technology type world as far as where they were wanting to lend money. And then they told those people, hey, we'll lend you this, but we want you to bring your full banking relationship to us. So now these small startup companies, their payroll accounts, their personal checking accounts, all of these accounts are there. So yes, as people started to sniff out that, hey, maybe there's some liquidity issues, you start having big withdrawals, which typically for many banks, you wouldn't have such large withdrawals because not a ton of people are way over that. Your typical bank would be about the complete opposite of SVB. About 70 to 80% of most banks' assets are under FDIC insurance coverage. SVB turned that model upside down on its head. So it was a unique strategy in which they were aggressively pursuing extremely high net worth individuals and companies and encouraging them to bring all their assets over onto the books. Then the other problem, as you talked about, is from a liquidation perspective. So as these liquidations begin to happen, SVB had made a bit of a mistake in which they went long duration with bonds. Now, they were owned predominantly treasuries, so they were safe. And you have a certain amount of those assets or those investments that you can mark, we plan to hold to maturity. So you don't have to mark them to market on a regular basis. But as soon as they started to have the run on the bank and they needed to create liquidity, they pull assets out of the hold to maturity and put them out there up for bid. Well, guess what? They took a massive hit because most everything they owned were extremely low-yielding bonds that were around 10 years or longer in maturity. Those are the bonds that got absolutely crushed as the Fed skyrocketed federal funds rate from zero up to where we're at now, close to five. So they took a huge haircut on assets that at one point in time were marked at around par value because they were going to hold them to maturity and get par value back, which you're confident you're going to from the government. So I think it's key to know or have an idea of the type of business that your bank is dealing with. Here in the Midwest and even most of the big national banks, they may be dealing with some of those same entities, but it's not their primary business model. They're still working with small businesses, mom-and-pop businesses, plenty of people that are nowhere close to a $250,000 SBIC insurance cap in that regard. The only potential risk to many of these small community banks is the potential run on the assets. It's not the business model that they have, but if enough people pull their money out of the bank, then that bank has to figure out where to get that capital to cover those liquidations. In the beginning, they can cover some of them through lines of credit and different avenues that the Fed has offered. Like right now, the Fed has opened up a new window to say, hey, to help provide liquidity, you can park some of your assets over here as collateral and we'll give you that liquidity. But they're not in the business that SVB was, in which they were dealing with highly risky type of loans and venture capital dollars. Most of the banks that our customers are dealing with or our listeners are dealing with, they're giving out auto loans. They're giving out mortgages. They're giving out second mortgages. You know, it's the typical thing that you see in most banking. So as long as they have enough capital on deposit, there shouldn't be an issue with that. Now, we don't want to bury our head in the sand and ignore potential fallout or contagion, because in the beginning of 07, that was the discussion, mm-hmm. was, well, there's not enough subprime mortgages to take down the whole financial market. Well, subprime by itself, no, but as we found out and got deeper into it and found out the amount of credit default swaps, and the majority of them were with one insurance company backing it, so when everybody held their hand out to be made whole, they all realized they're all standing in the same line, and that one entity couldn't make them all whole. So I think it is somewhat isolated to a few banks that are playing in that arena of more risky type of clientele, higher net worth clientele that may be far exceeding that $250,000 FDIC. And then if they get spooked at all, they start moving their money and pulling it out quickly. And then you have the end result of what we saw at SVB. But I think right here in our market, our listener market, I don't see right now anything that has me alarmed about any of the banks within our marketplace, be it the great big ones, or the regional, or even all the way down to the community banks. They all seem to be sitting in very good shape, minus the fact if the customers get way too spooked and pull all of the cash out.
So I'll walk folks through this briefly. Here, this company put money in treasuries, and they said, we're not selling these. We're holding these to maturity. So they basically get to mark them on their books at what they paid for them. And they mark them, same. So it doesn't show any gain, any loss on those, just the interest earned. And then you have the bonds that you say, these are for sale, or these loans are for sale. So these are things that I'm going to mark to market every day. I'm going to, you know, and banks play this game all the time. They put the most vulnerable assets in the hold to maturity and the most favorable assets in, hey, I'm going to sell these things. Because then they make their books look better. Well, whenever you say, okay, the Fed, we've now moved interest rates up so high, and long-term treasuries are down 20 or 30% in some cases, and now I'm like, well, I've already sold all the stuff that I thought was good stuff. Now I have to go into my vault and pull the held-to-maturities out and put them out for sale. And they're like, whoa, wow, you mean I'm going to buy what? It's this paying 2%? Sorry about that. I'm going to have to now sell it. And they sold them on average at 72 cents on the dollar. So they lost nearly 30% on the sale of their assets to simply try to cover. And they couldn't move assets fast enough. They even tried to convince some of their brokerage trading companies to stay open later so they could move some assets over, like you said, Rod, those ones held to maturity, and then borrow against them to create liquidity. And they just got caught, as they say in the Midwest, with your britches down. But I think this brings to light the fact that there's risk. And then when the Fed steps in, and I say the Fed, and the Treasury and everybody steps in, and they say, you know what, we're going to make all depositors whole. If I'm a depositor, am I happy about that? Absolutely. But I think we need to understand, guys, that we need risk. That's what makes this thing work, this whole thing work. You have to have risk, because without risk, there's no religion. And without risk, that means that banks can go rogue. And I'm afraid that if they don't come out and put some really solid banking regulations in, either raise limits, force people to buy more insurance on their deposits, whatever it might be, something, so that we don't, every time we have a major crisis, second largest bank ever to fail, that the Fed steps in. Do I think they did the right thing? Probably, because it would have created mass, you know, I mean, it would have been bad, but I didn't like it because I don't like the idea of the Fed or anyone, the government taking all the risk out of things. So just keep that in mind, folks. Without risk, there's no religion. You know, if you weren't worried about where you're going to go in the afterlife, how would you behave? I don't know. That's a personal thing, I guess. But the bottom line is, Rod, there needs to be some fixes here, and I don't know what they are exactly, but I'm sure that we'll have committee meetings after committee meetings after committee meetings in Washington. And hopefully they'll figure something out. So let's take a quick break. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, I think part of the problem, too, that we have to realize and understand, similar to inflation, the people who never saw the inflation coming are the same people who didn't see this problem brewing. It wasn't something that should have been hard for them to figure out or discover, are also the same people that are supposedly going to solve these problems. So I always question, how good can their solutions be when they couldn't even sniff out the problem? The Fed on the West Coast should have been overseen and should have seen there's a potential issue as soon as they started realizing 70 to 80% of those deposits were not going to be FDIC insured, and looking at their portfolio of reserves and knowing that they bet on longer duration when the Fed was getting to raise rates. So a Fed had the hand in this. But most certainly, the blame has to go to SVB and poor risk management within that bank as to how they manage their reserves. And what we've learned now is I think they were without a risk manager for like the last year or two. So kind of explains why the risk management side wasn't very good. But I think that's the thing to pay attention to, is that, yes, the regulators in Congress are going to have lots of questions. But in most circumstances, these are the same people that didn't see the problem coming. So I don't see how they're actually going to write solutions to fix the problem moving forward.
I could have said it better if it wasn't coming from Hot Rod himself. All right, let's take a quick break. Rod, I want to have you hang around because the Fed didn't meet this week. They did exactly what they said they had planned to do, even though the markets were reacting in a way prior to this. Maybe they won't do it, but they did it. I want to get your feelings on what happened, what did they say, and where do we go from here? We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Sorry, the music went a little long there. I was not paying attention. So let's continue on with Rod. Rod, the Fed met this week and did exactly what they needed to do. I was so afraid that they might pause and say, you know what, with what's going on, we're going to kind of hang tight for just a bit. And I thought, oh my gosh, if they do that, the world's going to say, this is worse than we even thought. Then I thought, okay, if they come and raise it a quarter point, then the market's going to react in this fashion. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe you raised the rates during this kind of time. And the market was just all over the place on Wednesday once the Fed announced they were moving that up a quarter point, like they said they were going to do.
Yeah, exactly. It was expected. And the reality is, I mean, their number one objective right now is fighting inflation. Now, this financial crisis, and it's hard to call it a full-blown crisis, although you can't ignore the fact that it is the second largest bank failure that we've ever had. But like I said, I don't believe it's going to be widespread. But anyway, those rates aren't going to have a huge difference moving forward, going up 25 bips. You know, like I said, the Fed maybe created a little bit of this problem with how fast they raised rates and how long they left rates at zero, because that encouraged more risk-taking for a longer period of time. But they've got to stick with their guns on the inflation side. Now, many people are saying the banking crisis that we're going through, what's going on, will be deflationary. And it will have some deflationary components to it. But it goes right along the same thing that I've been saying for a long period of time with the Fed raising rates. The areas that seem to be the most sticky from an inflation perspective are in the products and services that we refer to as needs. You have to have them on a daily, a weekly, a monthly basis. You don't get to pick and choose whether or not you need them or use them. this isn't going to create any relief necessarily in the price of eggs or milk or bread or your utility bill, those types of things. So from that aspect, the Fed still has to continue to do that. And from a financial potential spread of what we already know of the three banks that have failed and it potentially spreading to more, there are different tools that will be used. There are more tools that will be used outside of the FDIC and the Treasury more so than the Fed, although the Fed most certainly has some oversight over banking and financial stability in it. So, yes, that was expected. It's probably the right thing for them to do. Right now the market's pricing in another 25 basis point in May. But one thing that has dramatically changed since the failure of SVB, before you were looking at a federal funds rate close to 5.5 with no cut in rates this year, by the end of this year. Now you have somewhere in the fall that federal funds rate peaking out fairly close to where you're at now and beginning to decline, getting back down into the fours. Now, does that mean it's what's going to happen? No, it doesn't. But that is right now what the projections are, that the Fed potentially is going to have to re-stimulate the economy at some point in time this year to get it going again. And this is part of that lag effect. How long it takes for the Fed's actions to fully kick in and be felt, that's where they're still playing a little bit of a guessing game.
You know, I went back and looked at this chart. It showed in 1999, they're rapidly increasing rates. And when they finally turn to lower rates, it's like less than 6 months. Then you go back to 2005, they started raising rates to get up into the, you know, 2008 period of time. And it was like within 3 or 4 months, here came rates. And they came falling down, like off of a cliff. Same thing, obviously, from about 16 through 2020. And then, boom, rates started, just went down to zero again. And this right now, when I'm looking at this, is very, very similar climb, maybe even a little steeper climb. It's the fastest we've ever had. With that 05 to, you know, 10 kind of period of time, I'm sorry, 05 to maybe like 7 or 8 before it started to head the other way. But, yeah, when rates finally start to turn and go down, they fall like a rock because they're trying to play catch-up. So we'll see how this all shakes out. Last thing before I let you go, Rod. So we're talking about interest rates. And we have been buying bonds that are short-term at ridiculous high rates. I mean, people are buying CDs in the fives that are under 3 years. So you're getting agency debt close to six that's under 2 years. But once you get past, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I mean, once you get into the 10-year range, I mean, the rates are pretty normal right now. They're in the, what, mid threes, 3.6, 3.7 maybe on the 10-year?
Yeah, exactly. So you aren't really getting paid more to go further out on the curve. One of the reasons that people are going further out on the curve is also if what we're seeing now projected, which is that the Fed will need to begin reducing rates near the end of this year or into early next year, well, you may have missed out on a golden opportunity of locking in some of those higher rates, even though they weren't much higher than what a two-year was paying. So if you lock yourself into all two-year paper because, gosh, you're getting paid between 5 and 6% for some very high-quality bonds out there, when they mature, what is available to you? So that's where we've been kind of barbelling it a little bit. We've gone heavy on the short end, but for those people who need the cash flow, we're still tapping into it out there, even though we're not getting paid very much to own that longer bond. We also don't want to risk that we're forced to buy lower yields at the point in time all of our short stuff mature if rates have reversed. And right now, the 10-year and the 2-year kind of telling you that the story is rates will probably have to come down because that 2-year was almost, I think it even touched 5 briefly before the financial debacle kicked in. It went all the way below 4. I think it touched 4 a little bit this morning, but you're hovering right around 390 to 4% on the 2-year. You've had an extremely fast move in a very short amount of time.
It's insane. And honestly, folks, I mean, I think after May, June, get through in the summertime, we're going to have a lot of clarity what's going on. And you could very well have a really good run in the stock market towards the end of this year. Of course, we're not predicting it, but I'm just saying from experience that even as things start to slow down or are slowing down, and there's some inkling that there might be an easing up in this whole process of tightening. The markets move. They move fast. And that's why people who are sitting on the sidelines, man, I'm trying to say to them, like, I wouldn't just sit there, because when it takes off, it usually takes off fast. And the first 10 is the easy 10. It's the next 10 that's the hard 10. And, Rod, we've lived that for, well, I'll be going into 30 years next year. You're 27, 28 years into this thing. And I can't tell you how many times that we've seen it happen. When it doesn't make any sense, it usually happens, right?
Well, and that's exactly what I told someone yesterday. I said, just be aware that while right now it's very turbulent times and a lot of volatility, this is also typically what creates opportunity, as long as you have the time to realize that opportunity at some point in the future. I have been talking a lot about fundamentals and that earnings and revenue are still on the decline, but the market will not wait for earnings and revenue start to climb before the market begins to move. So you have to be very cautious in playing that game of, okay, earnings and revenue are still, estimates are still being pushed down. I'm going to wait until I see a recovery and they start getting increased. The market will probably sniff that out before you begin to hear revisions to the upside. So yeah, look for quality investments that you've wanted to own but thought were too expensive until recent prices, and don't be fearful that it may go down a little bit further, as long as your time horizon is right and you can buy that quality company cheaper today than it was a year or 2 years ago and feel comfortable that 3, 5, 10 years out, you're going to be very happy with that purchase.
Rod Holloway, everyone, we'll let him go and get back to work as we're recording early on this Thursday afternoon in March, and we will be live on, well, we won't be live, we'll be on the radio on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock because of NCAA basketball on Thursday night, and of course, WGCLradio.com and your favorite place to catch podcasts. So, Rod, thanks. A great job as always. Very informative, and hopefully put some folks' mind at ease.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great show.
Let's take a break. When we come back, FDI insurance, yes, is now being thought about, right, as we just talked about. But what does it cover, and how can you max it out at even one bank? Before we come, I'll tell you, I said this to someone, and they're like, really? You can really do that? The answer is yes. And then I'm going to talk about cash accounts at brokerage firms. What about SPIC, right? What does all this mean? When we come back, I'll try to cover it quickly and confidently. This is Your Money with David Ace. All right, FDIC, right? It sort of was that safety blanket, that security blanket. My passy as I was growing up made me feel comfortable. My baba, I sucked a bottle. I was like five, according to my mom. Actually, I kind of remember fixing it coming home from kindergarten, which is somewhat embarrassing. But anyway, it's like, yeah, I get hassled about that a lot. Anyway, so FDIC insurance, right? So sure, if I have money in the bank, I'm insured up to 250 grand. After that, I'm exposed. If the bank goes into whatever you want to call it, receivership, it goes bankrupt, the FDIC comes swooping in, usually on a Friday, and then Monday there's a new sign on the door, and that's just the way the way it rolls. But if Misty and I have an account together, we don't have to have individual accounts, but we both bring our own 250 together. So a joint account with her brings $500,000. Then let's say that, let's use my dad as an example. So he and my stepmother Jeannie have an account together. Boom, it's $500,000 insured. But then they say, you know what, we have four kids, and we'd like to add something called a pay on death, a POD, which means if we both pass away, then it just transfers to them. It's like a beneficiary on a non-IRA account. Well, guess what? Each one of the beneficiaries bring their own 250 of coverage. So you have 250 for Dad, 250 for Jeannie, 250 for all four of us for $1 million. So you're really at 1.5 million of coverage. And that's just by having the proper account registration. Then what if you have a trust, right? A trust is its own entity, so it has its own coverage. What if you have two trusts? Your wife has one and you have one. That's also separate entities. That covers it. And then you have the old thing about moving around to different banks. And you have credit unions that, you know, are CUNA, and you have the FDIC. It's pretty much all the same. But then what about insurance companies? This is something that I needed. People were like, really? I didn't get this. Yeah. What about deposits with insurance companies, like a fixed annuity, an immediate annuity? Who protects those? Well, there's a Department of Insurance in Indiana, and they have something called the Indiana Guarantee Association, and it basically creates the same kind of protection as FDIC or these other federal protection agencies. So how's that work? It's a little bit different, because if it goes into receivership, it's a little bit more of a major inconvenience, and you have to, they prioritize who's first. But basically, it's the same thing, 250. So you can go in and ladder annuities at different companies if you want to, or you can have the registrations work a little differently with the Department of Insurance. But understand the protection. So my suggestion to you would be call your banker. I was talking with a couple of them yesterday. Now, these are private bankers, which means that's all they do is work with people that have money. But if you have more than $250 in an account and you're concerned about it, which I would be. I mean, why would you not be concerned about that? Just ask them, hey, if I ask a joint person on here, if I put a beneficiary on here, how does that increase my coverage? And I actually went online and said, how do you maximize your FDIC insurance? And after the 15 ads that pop up on, you know, that you have to scroll through, there's some pretty decent information out there that sort of basically walks you through how to maximize your FDIC insurance at one bank, even, you know, with all these different shenanigans behind it. Now, what about cash at brokerage firms? So cash at brokerage firms, sometimes they hold them in banks, and it usually would be on your statement that they have it broke up into maybe 10 different banks, and it would be bank of this, bank of that, bank of this. That means that they've all, you know, spread it out for you, and it's FDIC protected. But even cash accounts at banks are typically insured. They usually have insurance on that through the SPIC, which is the Security Protection Investment Corporation, right? And that would say, okay, what if a brokerage firm failed? Well, you still own that stock. You still own that mutual fund. That's basically saying what it's saying. It's not insuring you against loss on your investments. But the cash accounts are typically insured up to a pretty sizable amount. Like the main firm we use has standard insurance at $2 million. Now, if someone said, I have $5 million in cash, we can say, okay, we'd like to buy a little more insurance. So we can actually buy insurance to increase to $5 million or $10 million or $20 million or $50 or $100 million. And that's how you cover the risk. Now, who is the insurance company? That's another question, right? If the same insurance company, as Rod mentioned before, is insuring all of this cash for all these brokerage firms, and they all go under, which they're not going to go under, but in an 08 situation, and you have one place and everyone's standing in line to try to get their money, that's a problem. So if you have a lot of cash, you need to talk to someone who knows how to protect a lot of cash. And that's probably not, you know, the teller down at the credit union, but it's someone who deals in the high net worth situation. So I think what'll happen, I think what needs to happen, is they need to increase the limit. Because back in, I think prior to 08, it was like $100,000. Well, then they increased it to $250,000, but it hasn't changed for years and years and years. And with this coming to light, I'm pretty sure they're going to have to say, listen, we need to increase this to $500,000. There's a lot more wealth around than there was 20 years ago. And I think that a person should be able to buy additional insurance for their account, or the bank can buy additional insurance for that particular person if they have $1 million in there and bring it up, right? It's like buying any other kind of insurance. You're just simply saying, hey, oh, you have a mortgage. Would you like some mortgage insurance? Oh, you have this credit card. Would you like some, you know, credit insurance? I think that's probably what needs to happen and what should happen, and we'll just see if it all happens at all. But usually nothing happens. As I've said many times on this show, nothing happens in America until there's some kind of a crisis, and then we deal with it. I'm not saying, as Rob was saying, this is not a crisis. We don't think. We hope not. But it's certainly an eye-opener, and it needs to be dealt with quickly and, you know, with some quick authority as well. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I mentioned earlier, without risk, there is no religion. Well, I just want to kind of talk about that, because without risk, there's no consequences. Or I'll even add benefits, right? So we're going to wrap up the show with that idea. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you've enjoyed the show so far. So think about this, right? Without risk, there's no religion. You ever notice when someone is in a real bind, right? Their marriage is falling apart. They don't know how they're going to pay all their bills. They're going bankrupt, whatever it might happen. They get real sick, you know, and where do they turn? They turn to religion. It happens every time, rather than the reverse way, right? If you already have that, then it's easy to turn to it because it's there for you. And I would say that risk is the same way. No one knows how much risk they can take until they've taken too much, and then it's too late. So without risk, there's no consequences. There's no benefits either. For everything you get, you give something up. Everything you give up, you should get something. Last week, I talked about delaying Social Security to age 70. What's the risk? But what's the benefit? Well, the risk is my wife and I are 66, 67 years old. We're not taking Social Security. I'm going to delay it to 70. And we get hit by that truck that runs around town running over people, and we die. And guess what? No one collected any Social Security. So that's the risk. But you're also not around to care about that. But what's the benefit? Well, I'm going to get like 24% more money plus inflation bumps if I wait forever. And if I die, my wife gets it forever. And then we can live off a happy ever after that. So you just have to weigh out what's the benefit to taking this risk. What is the risk? Because many people, again, have no idea what kind of risk they're really taking. Who would have ever thought putting more than $250,000 in a bank was risky? Well, there's risk to that. There's risk to everything. There's risk to driving down the road. There's risk of getting choked on a hamburger. Was the benefit there really good? Because, man, that hamburger was good, or that pizza was good. That's the lesson that needs to be learned, that without risk, there's nothing. And that's why I'm a little discouraged when the Fed or the government comes in and backstops risk. We need risk. We have to have risk. That's what really makes the world tick. All right, let's take a quick break, come back, and wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone, we're wrapping it up for this week. Can't wait for next week. Listen to us on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. Of course, if you're listening, you know what time it is. WGCLradio.com. If you've not been there, really cool new logo and all the stuff that they've now done to upgrade that. And, of course, the podcast, which also houses 2025, The Final Drive, which I took a hiatus from for the last month, just with everything going on in my world with my mom and just other things. I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to take a break. But I've got a really good one teed up on our tax-free bonds, really tax-free, and how to get the most out of tax-exempt bonds, and even should you even own tax-exempt bonds. It's a good one, and the reason I know it's good, I recorded it, and then I deleted it by mistake, so I have to go back and re-record it. But I'm going to try to get that done actually today on a Thursday so it can go out live, 2025, The Final Drive. What you need to know to win, hopefully that'll air on Monday. But if not, it will certainly come out the following Monday. I hope everyone has a great weekend. It sounds like the weather's going to improve as we move throughout the rest of this week. It's certainly warm today. And have a great week next week as well. And I'll be back in the hot seat here next Thursday at 6 o'clock, unless there's more NCAA basketball, which I don't know yet. All right, guys, have a good one, everyone. Bye-bye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.